evening and welcome. It's KBC Arts, arts and entertainment in our region, as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming. Tonight, we'll have music from the Platters in conversation with former lead singer Sonny Turner. Sonny's Platters are part of the lineup at a concert also featuring the Coasters with Leon Hughes, Little Peggy, Barbara Lewis, Johnny Tillotson, and Pat Boone. We're going to start with a recent book by Sarah Given. It's a satire of sorts, which came originally from a Facebook group for mothers and a Tumblr blog, which picked up readership exponentially overnight.
Joining us today is Sarah Given, author of her new book, Parenting is Easy. You're probably just doing it wrong. How are you doing today, Sarah?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing very well and can't wait to hear what's happening with this book. Sarah, how did you come to write this book?
Well, the book is an offshoot of a Tumblr blog that actually, the whole thing was a giant accident. I was part of this Facebook mommy group that someone one day posted some pictures that you would see online in advertisements, you know, for parenting type products, or maybe if you're reading an article on how to get your baby to sleep or how to get your toddler to eat, there's always a picture at the top that just shows everybody being really perfect and happy, and all the children are perfect and happy. So people were posting pictures like this in this Facebook group, and I started writing these really kind of sarcastic captions to go along with them. And everyone decided, like, this should be compiled somewhere where we can look at it. So I made a Tumblr out of it just to share with them. And the next day, it had 500 followers. And then the day after that, it had 5,000.
Wow.
And then the Today Show called me. So I, like, this little joke that we had, just this group of friends, turned into this giant internet juggernaut almost overnight. So it must have struck a chord with people somewhere.
I would think so. For some of our listeners, I'll say this, but I don't remember Dr. Spock having so many neat and nice pictures in his books.
Yeah. I think we maybe have we've scrubbed everything a little too much now. Yeah. I mean, how old are you? I mean, you have to convince people, right, that your product is awesome and great. So you got to show everybody being happy.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's basically, the book is a lot of the similar content from the website. So you'll have a picture and then, you know, it's kind of a sarcastic caption or something, you know, satirical underneath. And then I also really enjoy writing articles in the style of parenting advice that you would find on, like, how do I get my baby, you know, why won't my baby sleep? Or why, you know, how will I get my toddler to have fewer temper tantrums? And so there's a lot of satirical parenting advice columns in the book as well that just give, like, the absolute worst advice. things that you absolutely should not do.
But now, this book is a very good-natured poke at some of us who took parenting so seriously that we would listen to any and all advice without any joy or humor and actually do it. What do you hope to convey through this book?
Well, I mean, I was right there. For my first pregnancy and when my daughter was a baby, I tried so hard, and I figured if I just read enough and I did enough research that I'd do the right thing. And, you know, everybody is saying something different and just as convincingly, you know, and everything looks perfect, and you kind of start to doubt yourself and think, like, am I bad at this? Like, am I just not maybe cut out for being a parent? And so it's kind of nice to realize, you know, I make fun of stuff to make myself feel better. That's right. My very public coping mechanism. So it's nice to have so many people echo and be like, yes, we feel the same way. So I really hope that it can reach people in that place where I was, and we still are, you know, to an extent, not maybe as much and not as, you know, you don't have the sleep deprivation and the hormones and all that going on, but, you know, that people can read it and be like, oh, okay, it's not perfect, and it's actually pretty funny, and, you know, take all of that stuff with a grain of salt.
Yeah. Yeah, because, you know, I wanted to ask you, is parenting really easy?
No, not so much. it's great. I mean, really, truly. And I really try to dance that line of, it is, it's a wonderful, beautiful thing, but at the same time, there's so much just ridiculous stuff.
Yeah.
That you're doing or that you never thought you would do. Like, no one ever thinks that they're going to be covered in poop. You know, that's not like, that's not how you see yourself, or, you know, up at 2 a.m. and you haven't slept in a month. And, you know, you really have to get used to being a different person a lot of the time. And so, yeah, it's a really nice outlet to have this, to laugh at it, basically. And this is just kind of what it is now.
Yeah, and more parents and, well, people in general just need to laugh at a lot of things that go on in life today.
My great aunt, I grew up in a very pragmatic kind of Irish sarcastic household. And my great aunt always used to say, when someone was worrying about the baby needlessly, her answer was always, "Well, is he dead?" And you'd say, "No." And she'd go, "Then you're fine." Like, you know, like you're worrying about nothing. It's not a problem.
Right.
So it's that may be a little overcorrecting too far, but it's nice to have some perspective. Because when you're in it, it does. It feels overwhelming. Like every decision you make could ruin your kid, especially when it's a baby and you've never done it before.
Right. Sarah, now you talk about loving teenagers, babies that sleep and do other things on cue, and women who are always upbeat and composed. How has advertising inspired you in your writing?
I'm fascinated by it, honestly.
Yeah.
I've always thought advertising was fascinating. I used to be a comedy writer in college, and I always liked to make mock advertisements and things like that, because I don't know, I just think it's interesting. Like I said, you have to kind of step back and look at how absurd it is, because if you don't, I think, and you take it at face value, depending on where you are, it can really mess with you. So I went from having it really mess with me to kind of saying, no, I'm going to make fun of this instead. And then, you know, like I said, being delighted to find that other people wanted to do that too and felt the same way.
You know, I am so curious as to, do all parents who have newborns just forget that they were once children and that, you know, they did learn something as being kids and they can apply that? How does that work? Do we just forget everything?
Well, I mean, if you haven't slept in a couple months, like that's like military grade torture, you know? Like
right.
you're not sleeping or eating, or you're not clean, you know, you haven't showered, and you find yourself choosing between like, okay, I can either sleep or eat or shower, you know, or go to the bathroom. Like, what am I going to do? I think part of it is that, especially with like the younger generation that's having children now, that the go-to, the really easy go-to is the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're looking for answers online to children-related stuff, I mean, you're going to find like a million different things. And what I've realized is I just need to talk to my parents, you know.
Yeah.
I need to call my parents or my family or like a friend that I know that like their kids seem okay.
Yeah.
and ask them what they did, because if you're looking other places, you're going to get a million different answers. And I think that's probably the overwhelming thing, because you're not going to want to call your brother at 2 a.m.
Right.
You know, like, so, but you can go online and you can look up whatever, and then you find yourself with, you know, a million different opinions.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I think I would like to call my brother at 2 a.m. because I know he'll be sleeping. So.
Yeah, well, there is that brother relationship in there.
Yeah, yeah, you know, come on, join in. Have a little fun. This is your nephew or niece or that soon is going to be living with you.
it really does something to you. I mean,
yeah.
Like, you do have to, the thing with your own kid is you've got a very vested interest, right, in making sure that child is okay.
Right.
So, yeah, but it is like torture, kind of. I mean, if you don't sleep for a couple of days, it's astounding, actually, what it does to you.
Yeah, and I'm sure the babies kind of start looking different after a while. This angel is now, you know, my jailer.
Tiny, screaming, pooping monster.
Yeah, it holds
why
all.
Why won't you let me leave the house?
Somehow it's holding all the keys. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Like this tiny little thing that can't even function basically controls your whole life.
Right. Now, you did speak about your thread, It's Like They Know Us. But how is it being received now? This was on Facebook, correct?
The original idea started on Facebook. It's Like They Know Us has always been on Tumblr. And then there's a Facebook page now, which is really funny because basically whatever I put up, then everyone makes their own caption underneath. So you can read through like 50 really funny ideas that somebody had about this picture. You know, it's really well received. And I get people emailing me all the time that say, you know, thank you. We look at this after we get the kids to bed at night and it makes us feel better. That's really all I could hope for.
Right.
I mean, it sounds like a lot of fun, and it sounds like something is right up my alley with the sarcasm and fun. You know, it's just good-natured. I can see this. So where can our listeners go to find out more about your humor, your book, and other works?
Sure. The book, Parenting is Easy, is available on Amazon at Barnes & Noble and IndieBound. And then you can find all of the content and satire on itsliketheyknowus.tumblr.com. Right. On Facebook, and that's Facebook/ It's Like They Know Us, and on Twitter at Like They Know Us.
Okay. Now, I have to ask you, after this book and the work you're doing, how do you follow this up? Maybe a comedy tour, another book, or have a seriously funny talk with advertisers?
Oh, they should hire me as a consultant.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, they should.
This that would be amazing. You know, actually, we're expecting our second child.
Congratulations.
So, thank you. On my radar, it's kind of like, have this baby and try to function through having this baby. I don't know what's next. I'm pretty open to whatever it is. A lot of people want to see another book or, you know, like a, what's the theme? Maybe a different theme, like holidays. It's Like They Know Us at the Holidays or something like that. So.
Right.
It'll be fun to see what direction it goes in.
Yeah, it will. I'm thinking maybe you should let the baby write the book and you can throw some captions in there.
The baby essentially will write the book, I'm sure.
Yeah.
There will be a lot of new material in the house.
Okay. Well, it's great that you have so many resources so readily available.
I know. Hey, that's a great way to look at it. That's a really beautifully positive way to look at it. I'm going to have so much more material now.
I really want to thank you for joining us today. I'm sorry, our time is up, but I've enjoyed speaking with you, Sarah. Thank you.
Thanks. You too.
You have a great day.
You too.
Thank you. This has been Emmanuel Rogers speaking with Sarah Given, author of her new book, Parenting is Easy, You're Just Doing It Wrong. It's a humorous look at parenting and helps us not to take ourselves so seriously when a newborn is coming to the house.
Once again, the book, Parenting is Easy, available through many online retailers. Also, it's liketheyknowus.tumblr.com, on Facebook, it's Like They Know Us, and on Twitter at Like They Know Us. You're listening to KVCR, it's on 91.9 KVCR, also at kvcrnews.org. Just ahead, music from the Platters, in conversation with former lead singer Sonny Turner.
Greetings, I'm Isabella, bringing you what's happening in your region. But before I do that, here's some fun facts about March because, hey, did you know in ancient Rome, before Julius Caesar, March was the first month of the year? In the USA, March is National Nutrition Month, National Peanut Month, National Women's History Month, and American Red Cross Month. Now, here's what's happening in your region. Saturday, March 12th at 11 a.m. to noon, Flying Tomato Festival will be going on at the Auto Club Speedway in Fontana, off of Cherry Avenue. It's the world's sauciest party with a combination of music and some food fighting going on. For more information, visit tomatofestival.com. Also happening March 12th at 11 a.m. and all day, the Irish Festival will be happening in downtown Upland off of 9th Street. Celebrate the best in Irish cuisine, have some family fun, see some vendors, and listen to some great live music. For more information, go to eventbrite.com. This is 91.9 KVCR.
You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR. I'm David Fleming. We are streaming live at kvcrnews.org. Coming up April 2nd in Ontario, a concert featuring the Coasters with Leon Hughes, Little Peggy, Barbara Lewis, Johnny Tillotson, and Pat Boone. We'll have interviews with several of those performers in the weeks leading up to the concert. For the remainder of tonight, though, the one grouping I didn't mention...
The Platters!
Sonny Turner and the Music of the Platters. And I have to say, I've had a lot of fun with a lot of interviews, and this one was no exception. I was already looking forward to speaking with Sonny, and he made it fun from the onset.
This is Sonny Turner the Burner. Doing well, sir.
Sonny Turner the Burner. That wasn't written into my introduction, but believe me, it is now.
So. Yeah. It's at this point, at this stage of my life and my career, I'm really highly enthused and still motivated.
That's something that, of course, the audience is thankful for as well, the fact that you are still bringing the music to the people. I would love to just start this by asking, how much of your time these days is spent performing? I'm trying to get a sense of what your days, or maybe nights, as the case may be, are like for you.
about 9 months of the year, in and out around the world and across the country, back and forth, about 9 months of the year. Slows down because of different changes in the entertainment industry. Of course, you know that. Things have changed over the years, from 78 recordings to 45s and 33 and a third to 8-track to cassettes. And now we're in a whole different world, my friend. Now that we've come back, now that I understand vinyl is very popular again. I've heard that a couple of years ago, that it may return. The Europeans, I think they started that in England, or some of the college students that took a liking to the sound, how warm the sound was, and it was a little richer sound than the actual CD.
Harder to lug to the gig to try to sell, but...
Well, you know, back in the day, as they say, I was merchandising my first produced albums, and it went pretty good, but the care of it, the managing of it, is the only thing that you have to be careful about. It being vinyl, of course, it being warped in the sun, or either mismanaged or broken, and that type of thing. But it's still, I think it's worthwhile if you treasure anything of quality. I'm the great. I'm just tickled to find that this is the new sound for the new generation, you know, and it just, I'm very pleased about it. Actually, when they hold up an album cover in the late night shows, you see all these TV shows at late night, and you say, man, does that bring back some memories?
Oh, yeah. Everything old is new again.
That's right. That's it.
Sonny, when you were talking about pushing your early records, are you by chance speaking of Metrotone recordings? Were there any recordings of the Metrotones?
Well, actually, yeah, there were. Rhino Records. Don Roby out of Texas recorded us. We have that. Actually, I'm on three recordings, you know, 345 singles that I recorded with the Metrotone. Matter of fact, I wrote two of the songs, recorded, and then we sang the one that was recorded and written by a female vocalist who subsequently became my wife in our early years, Lavinia Eaton, and she wrote a crazy song called Skitter Scatter. She was the only one that could sing the words. it takes a woman to elocute very swiftly, you know, but she's the one that did it. We were just amazed at her ability to just not only write the song, but to sing it, so she had to teach it to us verb by verb. Widder, wadder, whippy, wobby, slippy, sloppy. That was some of the lyrics.
I'm sure that'd have to be written out every single time. Now, was she part of the lineup when you guys were opening for Red Fox back in Cleveland, your early days?
That was after the group had separated. A couple of guys were drafted into the Serbs. That's what really broke up the Metrotones.
Okay.
But we had a pretty good run for a local group of kids out of Cleveland. And matter of fact, luckily for us, we adhered to the quality side of music, you know. And she was not a part of that. But we later became good friends in the group when they hired me or joined the group. And then we later became good friends and husband and wife later on.
Beautiful. Wow.
Now,
going to the Platters, you replaced Tony Williams, it looks like, in late 1959. I understand there were 100 singers that auditioned for the spot.
That's what they told me. And I said, well, okay. Because I was told that by Buck Ram and by Mr. Harry Siebel, who was the Clevelander who found me for Buck Ram.
Buck is the manager for the Platters for a bunch of years.
Yeah, Ram being the manager, yes.
And so was it a cattle call with literally, you know, 100 with 100 people?
Well, not exactly. Okay. What it was that after the Metrotones had departed because of being inducted into the service, a couple of the guys, and I went on as a single, to make a long story short, Levine and I became closer and what have you, and became a soloist in and around Cleveland and Canada, Detroit and different places, having been known to have that group, the Metrotones, and we were quite popular at that time. And after the guys were drafted into the service, I started to sing, and the venues accepted me as a singer, performer, opening act for big name performers, and went on from there.
Well, with the Platters, you were at the helm for a number of hits in the mid-60s, but when you joined the group, when you replaced Williams when he left, by the time you joined them, they already had so many known songs. Did you have any feeling of, say, mighty big shoes to fill? And I don't mean Williams' shoes directly, but just to continue this well-established sound.
I most certainly did. I was very conscious of that. And I was so struck with the idea of being in that position, you know, and hoping that I could get a chance to show them and give them the idea that they had confidence in me and secure that confidence by having some hit records. And later on, I did have three in a row and a couple of albums. You know, that was great for me. Yeah, I was, boy, I mean, big shoes to fill, of course.
You were only, what, 19 maybe, 19, 20?
19 years old, yeah.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. I can't imagine that. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah, well, I was being inducted into the Hall of Fame in later years, but also being asked to sing lead. And again, I used the expression to fill some big shoes. I mean, Tony was not just a very accepted singer across the country. He was well-renowned, right, as I found out as I took his place singing and traveling platters throughout the world. You know, we traveled every free country, and then we performed in Poland and in Russia. I'm telling you, it increased the excitement for me and the knowledge of, wow, here I am not believing I'm still in this position. It took me two or three years to really calm down from the excitement and the expect of being in that position and hoping and rehearsing and keeping myself in a good condition to perform out of respect for that position I was in. Yeah, he was quite a well-known performer, a lead singer. He was one of the greats.
Certainly. But you found acceptance with the audience. You didn't
care. Yes, that's what pleased me so much, is that when I did take it, I knew I would be confronted with people not being sure that they would like me, or I wasn't sure. Mm. And when I found acceptance, I was really pleased, and that helped my stability as a replacement performer.
Right. Wasn't there a period, maybe just a couple of years, when Mercury Records was refusing to release non-Williams singles, so you guys sort of had to write out the contract?
Yes, that was true. They hated losing the goose that laid the golden eggs, of course. I understand that. Yeah. And Buck Ram and Art Talmadge, who was also an executive at Mercury, they seemed to have accepted me and liked me as the lead singer. The group voted to keep me as the lead singer.
Oh, beautiful.
And against any opposition from Mercury, and that's what made the separation of Mercury and the writers. And we went to Music Corps. Yeah, so they kept me, accepted me in the group, and wanted to keep me as a lead singer. And when we left Mercury, as fate would have it on my side, a good karma, as they call it, boom, when we left, there was Music Corps Records, and that was a hit record. I Love You a Thousand Times. But Luther Dixon and his wife, Inez Fox, wrote that for me. And the music was changing, too, in a certain respect.
Yeah, I actually have a couple of pointed questions about the British invasion period, but we'll get to that in just a bit.
Yeah.
Well, since you brought up I Love You a Thousand Times, I noted that with the early Platters, you think of The Great Pretender, Only You, certainly Twilight Time, but some of the tunes that you helped bring the Platters back to prominence with, I Love You a Thousand Times, With This Ring, Washed Ashore, I was noticing these were all a little bit more upbeat. So was this direction?
Motown had taken hold of the world.
There's a Motown thing?
In order for us to stay relevant, we had to not change the style of the Platters so much, but the musical content to stay relevant in that market. We did it.
With this ring, I promise I'll always love you.
Luther Dixon, when he heard and saw me singing, he said, we got a song for him. It's going to be a hit record because this young fellow's got the versatility to sing this kind of music also.
This was definitely a conscious direction that the Platters were going in, not that it happened to be the upbeat ones that were charting. This was really the bulk of the material.
It was sort of an M.O.R., middle-of-the-road type of feel.
Sure, sure.
And it mixed with the style of the Platters. It mixed very well with the generation change.
Certainly. Now, Buck Ram, he was the manager. I know that he continued to work with Tony after Tony left the Platters. Buck, he also continued to manage and do some writing with the Platters, right?
Yes, he did.
I read that he was a writer first and a manager second. I found that he wrote a bunch of the Platters' originals.
Yeah, matter of fact, he was a songwriter. Yeah, he was. As I found out, being with the Platters, he was an attorney.
An attorney.
And also, he was a songwriter, attorney. But he wrote I'll Be Home for Christmas. He collaborated with the Three Sons on Twilight Time. And he wrote quite a few good musical compositions. The good thing about it, he accepted other compositions from other writers, you know, performers that wrote songs. I wrote a couple, and also Tony wrote a couple of songs also.
It must have been refreshing. You always hear horror stories about management and whatnot. As I understand it, Buck Ram was the kind of guy, he gave the guys credits. He didn't slap his name on it and forget the rest of the folks.
During my time with the Platters, that's pretty much the way it was. He wrote a lot of songs and he collaborated with other writers. If it sounded like the Platters style or if it wasn't too far afield from the Platters, you know, like with Luther Dixon, the people like that and different songwriters, you'll notice them on the albums. There was a variety of feel, a different concept, but it stayed within the Platters framework of arrangements. It was that smooth, sort of symphonic type of arrangements, you know, and which carried the Platters right through their career.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Sonny, you're the lead on so many, many tunes, but occasionally you had folks like Zola Taylor or Barbara Randolph or whomever providing a female lead. And so, of course, with the mighty tenors being on stage there, it's not a matter of hitting the notes. What made a song go to you or to Barbara or Zola or whichever one it was at that point?
The style of the song plus the story in the song, you know, if you're singing a song about only you, it's a romantic song. It could be something by man or woman, but mostly it was a romantic song. Depending on the title, the lyrics in the song, too. And some of the songs were written for the actual voice, my voice, and one was written for Barbara Randolph and Zola Taylor. She sang a lot of up-tempo songs. Tisket, a Tasket, Ella Fitzgerald type of thing.
Sure.
You know, All I Want for Christmas is My Two Front Teeth, that type of thing. It was sort of like in the novelty type of very happy songs, you know, type of songs. Then Barbara Randolph had the ability to sing the sultry type of lyrics in the songs, you know, or the kid type of things and what have you. So It was written, the songs that were chosen were written for the singer's voice, more or less, his style.
Nice reference points with Eartha Kitt and Ella. I mean, that's beautiful. We got you right away with those names. So speaking of Zola and not so much one of the novelty tunes, Try a Little Tenderness. That is a song that goes back way further than I ever thought, back to like Ray Noble and further. And with that, so many different reference points for various people with that song, whether it's Frank Sinatra, Otis Redding, or whatever the case is. So I'm curious what the big version of that was when the Platters chose to tackle that one.
Buck was trying to have a variety, looking to capitalize on the trend or the genre at that day, that time. There's a lot of great songs written. Try a little. Speaking of that being one, Otis Redding had the big hit in the R&B circuit with that.
Mm-hmm. At some point, I realized that there were re-recordings of some of the earlier hits, the ones with Williams, but now your vocals, the Only You and the Great Pretender, the Magic Touch. Were these re-recorded as the Platters, or were these under your name? And I'm curious why the need to re-record these.
The need, first of all, was to give the new generation a feel of the Platters with me, with my boy singing those particular songs that Tony had sang. And the reversion of the songs, I thought, to my mind, and I talked to Buck Ram about it, was to keep the quality of the arrangements so that they would be in the style that would make it palatable for the Platters fans. So the singing of the different songs that I did record, as a matter of fact, I re-recorded some I would rather had not done, like the style of the Great Pretender. He had a gospel type of feel to it. And I thought to myself, personally, I said, well, you know, Great Pretender, I don't know about changing that to that style. But I recorded it because it wasn't my choice or my right to make a decision. But I did have my opinion Okay. The Twilight Time, if they were kind of kept in the original form, I thought would have been much better because of the music and the arrangements were so nice, rather than to try to change it to fit the genre, you know.
Right.
It's very easy, just try a little tenderness.
Sonny Turner and the Platters will be at Gardiner Spring Auditorium in Ontario April 2nd, along with the Coasters, with Leon Hughes, Little Peggy, Barbara Lewis, Johnny Tillotson, and Pat Boone. You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR. I'm David Fleming. We are streaming live at kvcrnews.org. Let's go back now to Sonny Turner, former lead singer of the Platters. Now, can you guess at just how many hits the Platters had? That's coming up in just a bit.
The people you're about to see record for Mercury Records. They've sold over 17 million records. Ladies and gentlemen, here are the Platters.
Heavenly shades of night are falling. It's twilight time. Out of the mist, your voice is calling. It's twilight time. When purple-colored curtains mark the end of day, I'll hear you, my dear, at twilight time.
The Platters did have a lot of original tunes, Twilight Time being one that existed as an instrumental first, but Buck brought in vocals for that. Now, the Platters also covered many well-known tunes, and so I'm curious if this was a case of Buck Graham saying, this is the tune that you folks should cover, or some of the band, you enjoyed singing it, so it ended up on the records.
This Platters had a style, as you know, of romance and quality type of arrangements. So there were, say, uptight songs such as Smoke Gets in Your Eyes. It held us in good stead to stay with that type of feel, but not to go too far by the Motown type of feel. So I think the choices were, I think, treated with respect for what the Platters' style was, not to go too far afield.
Nice.
Together, at last at twilight time.
Well, now, sometime in the mid-60s, were you a part of the lineup that Nate Nelson from the Flamingos?
Yeah, lead singer for the Flamingos.
Right.
Only Have Eyes for You. That's his voice on that hit record.
I could show the world how to smile. I could be glad all the while.
So when he joined the lineup, did you guys end up having some Flamingo tunes thrown into the Platters' live performances?
Yeah,
and
we
he's
did.
Right there.
Matter of fact, I mean, why waste a fabulous voice
right.
like that? You know,
yeah.
We did I'll Be Home. And here's another factor about the melodies of the songs. He did If I Had You, Could Show the World How to Smile. You know that one?
Mm-hmm.
And he did a fabulous job on the stage singing those particular songs. Yeah, we incorporated songs that he recorded and that for his style. And it worked very well.
If I had you.
We referenced this earlier. Just very recently, I spoke with several members of groups like the Marcells and the Skyliners, the Drifters, you know, Charlie Thomas there. And one of the things that we spoke of was the British invasion and how it really affected what the groups like the Platters and like the Skyliners, the doo-wop, the late 50s, early 60s groups.
Well, it was just a change. It was time for a change, musical field, you know. And we traveled through England and different places, and the Platters' music was dominant in their countries. And I think it was a time for a change when the Beatles came into the forefront with their style. You know, if you remember, they covered a lot of Chuck Berry and Little Richard when they first started out.
Certainly.
And to introduce themselves to the American public. Then they started, Paul and John Lennon, start writing for themselves, you know. I like their later music myself, the songs that those guys wrote that introduced and made the Beatles who they were.
Absolutely.
So it was acceptable. It was all good. I think after a while it became a good mix. the British sound and the American sound became a good mix. They covered a lot of American artists, mostly the black artists that was recording. They covered a lot of the rock and roll music.
So I guess we think of the British invasion, these guys coming over here and changing music, but in all honesty, we've got the people that were performing over here, like yourself, going over to England, and you're showing the roots of the Stones and the Beatles.
Right. The Rolling Stones, all the different groups in England were copying, borrowing, let's say, and from the American artist here. Yeah. You know, and I thought it was a good exchange. Because we were really strong in Europe and South America and different places. So it's all the world of music. The variety of music gives the whole world a stage of enjoyment from all these various different artists. So I didn't mind it. They call it the invasion. Mm-hmm. We invaded them too.
Well, turnabout's fair play.
Yeah, it worked out for both musical genres, you know.
Well, you were with, let's say, Bucks Platters, what, until 1970? I think it was in the mid-60s when we started seeing all these different splinter groups carrying variations of the Platters' names.
Yeah, that was unfortunate for any time that you have a big, well-known entity like the Platters. You know, even the Drifters, they had a lot of people, unscrupulous promoters, would try to present to the various parts of the musical world illegitimately. And they didn't mind disregarding the fact that the people pay money to see the actual group. And a lot of people weren't aware that these people were imposters. You know, so the deception was too widespread. So that was unfortunate. Still today, you have people out there performing, calling themselves the Platters. Or I've known of three or four different guys calling themselves the lead singer of the Platters.
Mm.
Even in Germany, I saw it on the internet, there's a white guy who claims to be the lead singer of the Platters. And we have three black backup singers, and he's the lead singer of the Platters. I just fell out of my chair.
That's one you might believe until you see a photograph.
Yes, you know, we have a thing called Truth in Music that was started by a lot of the performers, the Supremes, Barry Wilson, John Bauman, Bowser of the Shawnee, Herb Reed, and a lot of the different performers came together to form a Truth in Music Act and wanted to have a referendum passed throughout the world to protect the performers who put so much of their lives into this music, and especially, moreover, the public.
You're my dream come true, my one and only you.
I'm glad you mentioned Herb Reed, another former Platter, part of the original lineup and part of your lineup as well. I wanted to ask you about, I understand that you were instrumental in getting some of the Truth in Music laws passed in Nevada, North Dakota, elsewhere.
Yes, matter of fact, Herb and myself, Bauman, Mary Wilson, Charlie Thomas of the Drifters.
Oh, Charlie, cool.
Little Anthony of the Imperials, and a lot of the performers gathered together as a combination to fight the imposters, you know. And Herb Reed was one of the founders of the Platters, actually.
Yeah.
You know, it's just too important to rip the public off, as they say. You know, people being ripped off by these imposters. It's almost criminal that they don't mind defrauding the public when they say they're the Platters and they're not.
If you want to sing the music of the Platters or the Drifters or whomever, just call yourself a tribute band or a cover band or whatever the case is.
Exactly. Yeah. And that would be a compliment to say, here is a song written by Buck Graham, recorded by the Platters, Mr. Tony Williams.
There you go.
And sing the song and give credit to the artist who recorded the songs, you know. not defraud the public. They're defrauding the public when they say they, oh, I sang with the Platters. And, well, you sang backup, and a various one of the groups that you were hired, but you have no affiliation further than that, you know.
Right.
And try to put the stamp on. Well, I was a former member of a group called the Platters, who was a former member of the former member of the former group.
Yep, the fourth drummer's third cousin.
Yeah, and it's like a guy told me, he said he had a group of Coasters. And he says, I am the nephew of Cornell Gunter. I said, and?
Right.
So? Yep. And what's that make you, you know, that doesn't give you authorization or make you established member of the Coasters.
Well, now, you finally left to form your own Platters lineup around 1970, I guess. So
yes.
What was the reason, if you don't mind going into it, the split off from Buck Graham's group?
Well, I was the last one to leave. I was under contract to Buck Graham.
Herb before that, right?
Yeah, Herb and I were the last ones to leave the group after the transition and different members came on board. And it got to be, the quality kind of filtered down. The music itself, the selection, and different people that were hired to perform, and it just got to be less quality, I put it that way.
Okay.
And so I decided to depart myself. And I called myself Sonny Turner and Sound Limited for a while. And then I just said Sonny Turner Show.
Okay.
You know, former lead singer of the Platters. A lot of lawsuits ensued
right.
after that, because myself, I was sued by the Buck Graham because I was using my credits, having been lead singer of the Platters. And then David Lynch and Paul Robbie, Sola Taylor had a group together, and there was a lawsuit from Buck Graham against these guys, and then Herb Reed, and then there was a lawsuit against them. It just got to be ridiculous. So my whole title was Sonny Turner, former lead singer of the Platters.
Gotcha.
And I was ordered by the court to say that and say nothing else but exactly that, so I wouldn't fraudulently be misleading.
Gotcha. Well, it's very honest, but I have to say it sounds like a court order if you're saying
that. And so it was all right with me because my talent and my ability took great pride in that. And to this day, I'm feeling very well about my accomplishments and where I stand today.
A few more things here, Sonny. I was looking at some numbers, and this is amazing. 40 charting singles. There's
yeah.
also a compilation out there, The Platters Best 100 Songs.
Yes. There's a beautiful 9-CD pack put out by Bear Family Records in Germany. But it's beautifully done. And it's about 200 songs in that particular album. Matter of fact, we recorded an entire album of Latino music in Spanish. The Platters Sing Latino.
Had no idea.
Yes, sir. And then there's one called The Platters Christmas and several other albums and a lot of songs that people have not really heard throughout the years, you know, in that 9-CD pack. It was well done, beautifully done.
Did you speak Spanish before that album?
Sí, como no. Yo hablo un poquito. You know, yo hablo mucho canciones para él.
I see. Okay, then did you celebrate Christmas before the...
Yeah. You know, I still feel very proud of having been and am the last living member of the actual Platters.
Still
recording
true.
Music.
Well, these days, or even throughout the decades and decades here, do you like having fun with the upbeat numbers or truly wooing
yeah.
the ladies with Smoke Gets in Your Eyes and things like that?
First of all, age is just a number, my friend. I can get as sultry and romantic as anybody.
Yeah, you know baby.
But it's the variety of music is always best. Just great. I love doing a lot of Jackie Wilson stuff.
Oh, fun.
Earth, Wind, and Fire. Hmm. Yes.
Okay, you got me at Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Well, my latest recording is Let's Go Way Back, and it has that Motown Platter sound. It's on the charts. It's doing rather well.
Excellent.
Yes, sir.
Well, here's another question about preference. Do you enjoy the huge halls where you're seeing a literal wave of faces and applause, or, say, the smaller clubs where you can walk right up to a table and woo the ladies?
I enjoy that. I love the intimate connection with the audience because I can see their faces, they can see mine, and they also, we exchange vibes. You can really feel the vibe of people when they connect with you, when you connect with them. And I like to look at person when I'm performing and singing to them.
Nice.
I don't sing at them, I sing to them.
Oh, good.
And that way, the experience is complete.
Nice. Well, we were speaking earlier of the Tony Williams era and the era with you, but the thing is, when people come to see the Platters, they're looking for Platters music. They're not there looking for the Williams Platters or the Sonny Turner Platters. Whether it was your, quote, era or Tony Williams era, what do you always make sure to open with? Something that just grabs the people and says, yes, the Platters.
Yes, I do. Matter of fact, my opening number a lot of times is With This Ring, and then we go into a medley of the Platters. We start with Twilight Time, Magic Touch, The Great Pretender, Only You, Smoke Gets in Your Eyes. Then we have a little interlude there, and we go on and we talk about my career with the Platters and what people are really interested in. And then we go into Harbor Lights, Red Sails in the Sunset, My Prayer, and such as that, One in a Million, Heaven on Earth, a lot of the musically histrionic of the Platters.
Aren't Harbor Lights and Red Sails some of the first ones with you?
I did re-record that.
Okay.
But Tony Williams did it first.
Okay, gotcha.
Home safely to me.
So here's one that could go nowhere, or it could be really interesting. When Freddie Mercury got to number 4 on the charts in England with The Great Pretender. I read that Buck Ram was really pleased with the success, but had no idea who Freddie Mercury was. So I want to know if you, Sonny, if you knew who Freddie was when this song was resurfacing 32 years after the Platters' premiere of it.
Of course, Queen.
Yeah,
the group called Queen. They were great singers, too. Incidentally, there was a movie called Night of the City with Robert De Niro. And in the credits, when the credits rolled, they played Freddie Mercury's version.
Yes, I'm the great pretender. Just laughing and gay.
But during the movie, when De Niro walked into this bar and was talking to somebody, they were playing my version of it. So that was delightful.
I'm wearing my heart like a crown, pretend that you're still around.
And that's on Prince of the City. I understand we can also get your voice in The Nutty Professor, too, and Hearts in Atlantis. Were you singing in the background, or were they just pulling old Platters tunes?
They were playing the tracks.
Okay.
That was great.
Is that the kind of thing that you know about ahead of time, or do you watch the movie and say, hey, that's me?
Oh, I was surprised by it. I didn't know about it ahead of time. My daughter.
I had no idea.
She went and saw the movie with Anthony Hopkins in Hearts of Atlantis. She called me and said, Dad, I just came out of the movie. So I said, yes. She said, hey, you're singing the track, or you're in the movie. She said, it's 3 songs, and say, that's your voice. And I said, what? Then I rented the movie, and sure enough, they don't tell you. They just go ahead and do it. They just did the I Love You 1,000 Times, a McDonald's commercial.
Oh,
with a young performer, a young lady singing Today's Style. She sang I Love You 1,000 Times on the commercial.
I don't know if I want to hear that.
I was hoping that I would get a check, but I didn't write it.
I knew Freddie would give proper tribute to any song that he sings written by anybody, but
oh, yeah,
I don't
was,
know about this McDonald's
He's quite
commercial.
A performer himself, yeah. Queen, I knew exactly who that was.
Oh, yeah, love him. We're going to be seeing you in this region very soon, and a really nice lineup coming up, the Coasters along with you, and also we've got little Barbara in there, Pat Boone. I was asking you earlier about potential openers, something that just grabbed the folks with. So now I'm asking about a potential closer. I almost predicted Twilight Time, but I know also that I'm picking from so many songs.
Usually it would be My Prayer. Smoke Gets in Your Eyes.
Smoke Gets in Your Eyes. Beautiful.
Really nice.
Sonny, I truly want to say that this is a concert that I'm very much looking forward to. Barely pushing 50 years old, but I was raised with my mom's at the Hop Records and all this, and so I grew up with the Platters and the Coasters and the Skyliners long before I got to Led Zeppelin and Queen and all that. So.
Okay. Well, it's good to hear. I'm glad to be able to talk with you.
Definitely.
It's a pleasure. And don't forget that new record called Let's Go Way Back. That's what we're doing.
Let's go way back.
In a good way.
Absolutely.
Speaking.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for your time, Sonny.
I appreciate that, and thank you very much. Have a wonderful day.
You too, I hope. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
So I smile and say, when the lovely flame dies, smoke gets in your eyes.
Smoke gets in your eyes.
Smoke gets in.
Sonny Turner, former lead singer of the Platters and still carrying the torch for Platters music today. Once again, Sonny will be performing in Ontario April 2nd as part of an all-star lineup including Leon Hughes and the Coasters, Little Peggy, Barbara Lewis, Johnny Tillotson, and Pat Boone. That'll be at Gardner Spring Auditorium in Ontario. More information at affordablemusicproductions.com. And that's just about going to wrap up another edition of KBC Arts. Thanks once again to Sonny Turner and also to Sid Robinson for help in setting up the interview. Several more to come with this upcoming concert. Thanks again also to Sarah Given, author of Parenting is Easy. You're just doing it wrong. Here at KVCR, thanks to Lillian Vasquez, Rick Dulock, Lindsay Weisgarber, Emmanuel Rogers, Isabella Salinas, and General Manager Alfredo Cruz. Beyond the music of the Platters heard on tonight's program, music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts, Behind Us Now, for example, composed and performed by Sean Longstreet, so thanks once again to Sean as well. You can hear many past KVC Arts programs via podcast at kvcrnews.org/arts. And David Fleming, thanks especially to you for listening and for your support.